I'd like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land upon which this recording takes place, the Gubbi Gubbi people of Southeast Queensland. I honour their continuing connection to land, sea and sky, as well as their elders past, present and emerging.
Hey there, welcome back to the Men, Sex and Pleasure podcast. I'm your host, Cam Fraser. This is episode number 214. We're talking all things masculinity, sexuality, male bodies and men's experiences of pleasure. On today's episode, I have the pleasure of chatting with Mosh Weissman. Mosh is a certified men's sex coach specializing in sexological bodywork. Since 2018, he has served as the catalyst for many men to discover more fulfilling sexual lives, guiding them through overcoming insecurities, lasting longer, and unlocking mind-blowing full-body orgasms. His unique approach combines traditional Taoist sexual techniques practiced for thousands of years with modern sexological bodywork principles. Currently, Mosh offers regular 10-week sexual empowerment courses that can help you to cultivate a sex life that feels amazing and liberating. On Mosh's website, you can find more information about this. His website is multiorgasmcoaching.com. That's multiorgasmcoaching, or one word, .com. On this episode, the two of us talk about two major topics: mindful masturbation and the importance and the benefits of having a solo practice that is about cultivating pleasure in the myriad ways that it's available to you, and then how this can help translate into experiencing multiple orgasms, non-ejaculatory orgasms to be specific. So if you're interested in that, we talk about it and nerd out a little bit on some of the science. This is going to be the episode for you. Super grateful to Mosh for reaching out to me and allowing me to connect with him. It was really interesting to get to hear his perspectives. And yeah, it was just a lovely conversation. So I hope you enjoy listening.
And you and I could jump straight in, mate. The way that I like to start is with three questions. The questions are: who are you? What do you do? And what are you really passionate about?
I'm Mosh Weissman, and I'm a sexological body worker, and been working the last year since 2018 with men on how to live a more empowered, in-tuned sexuality. It's the most passionate topic I've ever dealt with so far. Maybe at some point something else come, but I feel a lot of need there. I feel a lot of resonance with the men I work with, and there's definitely a strong calling for me to do that kind of work.
Yeah, beautiful, mate. Thank you for sharing. And I'm curious, what led you down the road of sexological bodywork? How did you find yourself in that profession?
Yeah, that's a good question. I happened to have had a friend who said she's going to this open evening about sexological bodyworking. That was 2016. And I thought, that's an interesting topic. And I went to this open evening. Joseph Kramer himself was present that evening. And I was listening to that. And I thought, that's actually quite an interesting approach. I've never heard about something like that. I went directly afterward to Joseph and I asked him, well, I'm interested in that specific thing about the orgasm. Could that fit in the program? And he just looked at me and said, whatever you want to do, I'm curious about anything. And I just realized that kind of open approach to sexuality was fitting so well with, yeah, my scientific background, the way I was looking at sexuality. It just fit perfect. And I said, okay, I'm going to join the education. And yeah, since then, it's kind of fit really good with the more traditional stuff I've been doing before. I've working with the Taoist techniques and trying to find a nice blend of those traditional things and the more, I would say, exploration-based method of the sexological bodywork was how I went with that and started working with men, and then realized there is such a huge demand for this kind of work.
Yeah, totally. And what a beautiful opportunity to be introduced to the work by Joseph Kramer himself as well. Joseph's been on my podcast, episode like number 15, I believe, or something to that effect. And we had a great conversation. I really resonate with his approach. And so, yeah, I'm a big fan of the modality, sexological bodywork, and it's something I've been wanting to do myself. What led to you working with men specifically? Was that like immediately you're like, this is who I want to work with, this is the demographic? Or did you kind of find your way into like, well, no, I think this is who I desire to work with because I can see the need here, and it was kind of a recognition? I'm just curious where your framework was for that.
That's also a good question, because I think I needed to work through some of the resistance I had to working with men. I grew up with a father who was very authoritative, and somehow I think that shaped a lot of my push-pull with working with men and with men groups. And there were a lot of years of some taking some distance. Yeah, when I realized that men can really benefit from that, and I could see how me as a person who identifies himself as a man have a more direct approach there. Some men were really looking for other men who could give an example, who could share from their experience. That just strengthened me that is the right way to go. I had also some questions from women, if those methods also work for them, can they also join or have a one-on-one session? I tend to be open for that, but my main focus is really the work with men at the moment.
What do you find are some of the most common concerns that you work through with your male clients?
Well, a lot of men are busy with anxiety around performance. A lot of them are busy about feeling somehow caught in patterns, especially porn consumption is a big issue. When I talk with people, they say, they're not sure, is this really healthy? And they kind of look at me and ask me, what do you think? And so I really feel how isolated men are around those topics, and how much they want to have someone that they can feel safe with to just talk about that. Often they would say to me after a session, you're actually the first person I ever shared that with. I didn't even tell this my partner, which I think is amazing. It really reflects that difficulties to come out with those things and to communicate and to share about that. And even some men have been running those 10-week empowerment courses, and some men tell me, I would love to do that in a group, but I have that anxiety of being with other men, of sharing those vulnerable things. Let me tune in if I can really do that. And some of them at the end say, no, I prefer to do it just one-on-one with you because I know it's a more safe space for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have been told by my male clients, so many of them, that something that they've shared with me is that's the first time they've ever shared it with someone else. And yeah, so I recognize the, similar to you, Moshe, the need for men to have those spaces to speak openly, vulnerably about their sexual anxieties and concerns and insecurities. A lot of guys aren't talking to their mates about it, you know, like they don't necessarily want to go to see a therapist or a counselor. And what I've found, and I've said this a couple of times before on the podcast, is I'll get messages via social media of men and women, but like I specifically speak to men about their sexual anxieties and concerns. Like they don't know me, you know, they've never met me in person. They obviously feel comfortable enough knowing me and enough through that parasocial online relationship. But they just want to share. They're just like desperate to speak to someone about sexuality in a way that isn't going to make them feel judged or shamed or like they're less of a man or whatever it might be. And so I really see the value in creating those safe containers for guys to open up and have those experiences. So yeah, super on board with that, man, and really resonating with that experience that you've had.
Yeah. I mean, I
go ahead.
I can just add that One of the things that most men share after doing my 10-week empowerment course is that the best thing about it was the possibility to share and to talk about those things in an open way with other men. I mean, and some of them have done really amazing progress, have experienced things that they couldn't have even imagined to do before. But still, most of them say the best thing about the course was the ability to have other men that they can talk openly and vulnerably about.
Yeah, beautiful. Do you give guys homework after you do some, or home play, as I think it's referred to in our business? You know, activities they can do at home in order to...
Definitely. It's from the beginning, I say, look, if we're going to do this, there is a container here that needs to be kept. And if you think that you don't have at least 2 hours a week to invest in a practice, in exploring those techniques, I don't think this course is going to be really beneficial for you. So they really need to think before. And if they join the course, then usually at the beginning of each group meeting, we have a sharing about what were the experiences with the practice. So it's kind of very clear that that's the base of the work, the personal practice exploration.
Yeah, beautiful. Can you give an example of what that might look like?
Yeah, definitely. One of the techniques we work with is, for example, the microcosmic orbit breathing, which is the Taoist technique of circulating the energy when you're breathing. And an example for how I like to work with the variation of the traditional to other method is I would tell the men the traditional way would be as you inhale, you're pulling the energy along the spine upwards, and as you exhale, you're taking it down. Now explore at home how it would be to do it the opposite way. So you would, as you inhale, you would take the energy down, and then you would pull it in the opposite way. And try to integrate that in the solo sex. I mean, I often say it's not about doing it the whole time during the solo sex, but just to get some kind of a feeling for that difference. And yeah, give me a feedback, like after this 2 weeks, what worked for you. And the interesting thing that comes out is that there's really not a one thing that works for everybody. Everybody is unique there. And some men say, oh, this thing worked for me. The others say the other thing worked for me. Some people say, oh, they could feel more their pelvis area. Some feel more their throat and chest area. It's a very, it's very much about that experience that each person does, and try to tailor then the work on according to what works. And I say, okay, if that was the method to work, we're going to continue to the next step with that for you. And it kind of builds up on that.
Yeah, I like that. I do like that client-centered approach. I don't appreciate how there are practitioners who advertise online saying like this is the one thing that you need to do in order to like reach multiple orgasms, or this is the one thing you need to do in order to solve for mature ejaculation, because we're not robots, you know, we're not these cookie cutter, exactly the same, you know, bodies and anatomy and personality and psychology. So yes, I very much appreciate that client-centered, directed approach. Like, you know, what's working for them. I often say to my clients at the beginning of our coaching sessions together, like, I'm going to take a bit of a spaghetti against the wall approach with you. Like, let's see what sticks. Let's see what lands for you. Let's see what, you know, what you feel good with, and feed that back to me. And then based on what it is that you've shared with me, we can tailor the approach accordingly based on, yeah, what it is that's working. So very much in alignment with you there, mate. Thank you for speaking into that. Yeah, because I see people not doing that, and it really does bug me. What I wanted to ask you about is like specifically sexual practices. So, you know, one of the things that I will recommend to my clients is, you know, some energy circulation practices, whether that's the microcosmic orbit, whether it's, you know, the yogic nectar cycle, or whether it's something else entirely. Like, one of the things that I will invite them to practice doing is like their breathing and their energy circulation whilst masturbating or whilst doing a self-pleasure practice, you know, where I've got them really trying to intentionally dial up their eroticism and their arousal and really focus on the pleasure and the way that doing the practice shifts their experience of that pleasure and arousal. And so I'm curious, how do you integrate the microcosmic orbit, for example, and other practices into a sexual context? Because I'll get guys doing it non-sexually first to like practice it, and then I'll get them to incorporate it into sex or sex with themselves or sex with a partner. And it usually throws up a few different hurdles as well, three different obstacles, trying to go from like a non-sexual setting to a sexual setting. The erotic context kind of changes things for them. But I'm curious, like, how do you navigate with the guys? Do you give it to them in a, I usually say like in a sober setting and then in a highly aroused setting, because arousal is like an altered state of consciousness. So is there two different approaches there, and how do you help them go from one to the other?
Yeah, that's a good question that often comes in courses. We also take the approach of working on the exercise in a non-aroused state, just to get the feeling to the breathing and how it is done. And then there are some guidance about what are elements that could help to integrate that. So the integration is definitely an important aspect. Some of the guidelines for how to integrate that are not to get too focused about the technique. So if you have a certain masturbation practice, try to follow that, and just in a little portion add that kind of breathing, so that it's not a completely new thing, but it's a way of spicing it up or changing a little. I often say that, especially at those high arousal states, so on the arousal curve, if we're getting to, let's say, something like 8 or 7, very close to that point of no return, that's a good time to take a deep breath and start to working with that circulation and see what does it do with the body, what is happening. Then maybe repeat that several times before trying to approach an orgasm with implosion. That's the more advanced part that usually comes more towards the end of the course. Yeah, and another thing is intention. Intention is a very important part that we try to integrate. So especially at those points where you're starting to do that breathing, to connect to that intention, remember why you're doing this. Those are all parts that help to bring that in the right way in. Yeah, there's no clear. We don't say, oh, mm-hmm. You should do it for that amount of time, or you should do it at least at the beginning, or we kind of leave them to find out and to explore.
Nice. Yeah, that experimental approach is something that I tend to adopt as well. And you know, an example of a question that I get all the time, because I teach a practice called Uddiyana Bandha in my coaching, and I found that to be personally one of the most like powerful practices for me, for like moving energy up and away from the genitals through like into the heart space or up the spine, whatever kind of language you want for it. And it's like quite an involved yogic practice, right? So it's like dropping down into a squat position, then coming up into a half standing position and like drawing the diaphragm up into the ribs. And so I'll get guys doing that as like a foundational practice, and then we'll start incorporating some mindful masturbation, self-pleasure practices in as well. And the invitation I have to them is like, you know, do some edging, right? So get up to that 8, 9, you know, out of 10 arousal point before that point of no return, and you know, take the stimulation away, do an Uddiyana Bandha practice there. So you're naked, like notice if it changes your erection, notice if it changes that arousal, notice if it changes where you feel pleasure in your body, and then continue your self-pleasure practice some more after you do it. And then it's like, okay, now you've done that. Now like we're going to incorporate it into partnered sex. And I always have a conversation with guys, which is like, you know, I don't expect you during to just hop up out of bed, do like 5 Uddiyana Bandha practices and then jump back into the sheets. The shift there is like, okay, how do we incorporate that particular sensation and drawing up of pleasure and eroticism away from the genitals up into, you know, the diaphragm or the solar plexus up into the heart? And so I'll give them like a mini version of that practice. So the intention is still there. It's like, this is the reason why we're doing it. And here's like a more subtle version of that, which is something that I will practice when I'm with my partner. And you know, you can do it in a yam position, that very classical position where like you're sitting, and if you're with a partner, they're sitting on top of your lap. You know, I kind of talk to the guys about moving their hips, so rocking their hips backwards and forwards, so they can kind of like tilt their hips towards their chin, and that can kind of like help them create a bit of a lock through the diaphragm, and they can do a breath in and they can hold if they like, and then exhale and things like that. So there's subtle shifts and ways of like taking a quite intense practice and kind of chunking it down into something that's a little bit more subtle and appropriate to be doing with a partner, as opposed to like jumping out of bed doing, you know, I teach like other asanas as well. I've got a history as a yoga teacher. So there's other like stretching things like that as well that I'll teach, which I'll get them to do in full during their masturbation practice. And I'm like, you probably wouldn't be doing this during sex with a partner. So let's find ways of incorporating it and integrating it into a sexual context with someone else that doesn't involve you having to like get up out of the moment, do the practice, and then come back. And so that's always like a very beautiful experimental time with the guys, because they kind of come up with these creative ideas. So I kind of give them some suggestions about how to incorporate it, and they're like, oh, what if I tried this? I'm like, go for it, like let's try it, you know, like feed it back to me. And if one of the guys shares something with me that's like really gold, and I'm like, well, I can't believe I've never thought of that, I'll ask him, hey, can I take that and put it in my like, you know, catalog of potential suggestions? Because the guys are creative. Once they're kind of given that permission to explore and to you know, follow their curiosity, they come up with like really interesting ways of incorporating these quite intense practices in a more subdued and subtle way during the sexual experience. Does that land for you at all? Would you notice anything like that with the guys that you do?
That sounds beautiful. Yeah, I definitely try in a similar way to create some kind of reference points, doing some exercise that it's clear are not fitting to all settings, clear that cannot be directly used, for example, in the partner sex. But in a way I see it, when they create this kind of reference, it makes it easier to be aware, okay, where am I now with my energy, with my body? And I think that that ability of us to sense, how is the energy moving? To which extent am I capable now to move the energy right now, or to guide it to certain parts, or to shift my state, like my, I mean, we're also changing the whole time. There are situations where we are a little lower, or we feel more tight around our chest, more protected. There are days that we are full with energy, and that of course also influences the way the energy moves in the body. And if we can create more awareness around that, that's the kind of reference that can help us to navigate through also, I would say, more like a situation with a partner that could allow us to say, okay, now we need a little longer time to warm up, or, hey, could we slow a little down here? I really need to get that energy moving before we go that high. I mean, that kind of communication, that kind of language and awareness can help us actually ramp things and, sometimes even if we need a little longer, come to that points of higher intensity or higher sensation, amplified experiences. So the starting point is different, but I think if we're clear about why are we doing this practice, why do we want to experience that? We want to experience that intensity. We want to feel our hearts opening. We want to get out of our mind. So the direction is to find a way to really activate ourselves, to really let that energy move through us. And I see that more as a tuning that we do according to the situation, the day. Is it that position? Can I allow myself to do some longer preparations? Some of the exercise I give men is to try and do some sports or some activities before. So, I mean, maybe it's kind of weird to do the yoga before just the sex, but if you go outside and do that and then come back and you're in the right state, maybe that could work.
Yeah, I really like that. And appreciate you mentioning the communication piece as well, because that's definitely something that needs to be incorporated. Something I want to talk to you about, and I know we spoke about this like prior to jumping on and recording, but is the incorporation of, like you said, intention and being clear about the reasoning why you're doing this. Is that the first step to a mindful masturbation practice? Is like just the mentality, the like shift in like, okay, what's the reasoning that I'm doing this for? What's the intention that I'm bringing into this practice? Is that, or do you start somewhere else?
Yeah, that's a good point. How is that related to the mindfulness around masturbation? I think it's a one way we can go with that. That could be the more I want to focus on an intention, or I want to keep my intention. The other way of being mindful is being very present. What is happening in my body at the right at this moment? What is happening with my energy? What is happening with my vibration state? I would say that's another approach to be mindful. In both cases, it's a very different experience than following some kind of a predefined sexual script, which is what most people do in the masturbation. It needs to be a certain hand. It needs to be exactly this, a certain type of porn. It needs to be a certain kind of experience. And yeah, usually that kind of pattern leaves us very drained. I mean, there's something about that. We can do that for several years, but at some point we realize there's a aching to experience something else. And that's what the mindfulness can bring in. When you take it into the intention, which is the other side of the mindfulness, it can look like, yeah, connecting to a certain kind of vibration I want to bring into my body. I want to feel more connected, more loved. I want to experience a deep feeling of coming home. Or it could be more around a certain kind of a project. I mean, I was quite surprised when I started working with some of my clients of bringing intentions that are, for example, manifesting a new partner. Or with my partner, she had a phase of looking for a new job. And I said, okay, let's use the sexual energy. Let's imagine what kind of job we want to bring that and use that in a mindful masturbation ritual. And it was amazing. A few days after, she had a job interview and bam, it was there. So those are very powerful things. And I think the key element is really that freshness that comes with the mindful masturbation.
Yeah, I appreciate you distinguishing there about a couple of different ways of being mindful. I hadn't really like contemplated that very deeply. So I'm grateful for like the invitation to really tease out those different ways of approaching mindfulness, which is quite cool. So thank you for that. I am then curious, like, where do you go from there? So like there's this, what I'm hearing, Moshe, is there's like the shift in the regularity and the pattern and the, you know, the standard way that this person, this man has been masturbating for however many years, you know, and I get that with my clients all the time. I'll give them a practice to do that's very different to the way that they've been masturbating for the last 10, 15 years. And then, you know, so there's that shift that happened, that invitation to explore something a little bit different, to kind of maybe acknowledge the desire for something different. I think that's a really important piece as well. Like I do think that when I start to speak to men about the possibilities of self-pleasure and what's available to them and how they can explore their eroticism, whenever I do that, my intention is really to inspire guys to think beyond like what it is that they've been experiencing and like what else they could possibly do with their bodies if they were to start pursuing that, rather than what I've seen other practitioners do, which is kind of like almost like shame guys for the way that they're masturbating. Like, oh, you're watching porn, you're like a terrible person for watching porn, you're like jerking off, like you're ejaculating frequently, you're wasting your life force, like just like shaming guys into doing better. And I don't like that approach. I like speaking about like what's available to you and how much you can, you know, explore if you're willing to give yourself that permission to do so. So like the inspiration approach, right, rather than like the depreciation. So
to get to my question is like, what's the next step then? So you've kind of invited them to think a little bit differently about their pleasure, their masturbation. Do you get guys like get stuck then at like what the next step is? Because I often get guys saying to me like, okay, I don't know anything else to do. Like, I don't like, what's the different way of touching my cock? Like, do I need to stand up? Do I need to sit down? Like, give me some practical kind of advice is what guys typically are looking for. You know, they want like a specific, here's the suggestion to do. Here's how long you need to do it for. Like, they're really looking for something concrete. And I'll kind of meet them there with some suggestions, but I'll also give them the autonomy to like really start to explore some things. But I'm just curious, like that transition point I've noticed with my clients, there's always like a bit of a stumbling there about like what to do next. And I'm curious if that's something you've noticed and how you navigate that with the male clients that you have.
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's because my program and my approach is very linked to that Taoist sexual practices. There is quite a clear focus about the microcosmic orbit as the first element or the first key of opening the heart. Then there is the activation of the pelvis floor muscles as a second key for opening the pelvis. Then there are meditation techniques for opening the mind and making it still and ready for the energy really to move through the body. And as a next step comes the implosion or trying to bring that sexual energy very close to the orgasm, in the orgasm, to the upper parts of the body. So in a way, yeah, my program is built like that. That once they get the preparation, the breathing, the PC, the head somehow, those three keys ready, the next step is to play with the orgasm, to try to get more of those higher orgasmic states into the body. And also there are different recommendations that I give. There are different techniques that we use. So there is in the course quite a clear focus that they don't have so much of that. We're not so sure where to take that, but there are definitely also some, I think, advantages in keeping things more open. I mean, I've also done some one-on-one working with men and haven't followed exactly this path. And I can see that sometimes it's beneficial to go also other paths, especially when there's tension around going to those high arousal state. It can create this kind of opposite effect where you feel kind of pushed into, okay, now I need to do this practice and I need to bring the energy all the way to the orgasm, and then it doesn't work and you have ejaculation. And so yeah, sometimes it just requires more of that, I would say, nurturing work of longer breathing work, longer meditation work. So I would say more focusing on that initial phase of the preparation.
Yeah, beautiful. Thanks for sharing, man. What is your experience of an orgasm beyond just ejaculation, right? Because I know you teach about multiple orgasms and non-ejaculatory orgasm. So I'm curious about like what your personal experience is. I'm always curious, guys that are teaching it, that are well versed in it. Like what was your first, you know, non-ejaculatory multi-orgasmic experience? And like, what do you feel it is different to like a regular ejaculation? I'm curious.
Yeah, that brings me quite backwards. I mean, I started with this practice when I was 16 with this book from Mantak Chia, The Multi-Orgasmic Man. And for many years, I was trying to get this kind of experience, this type of orgasm. And actually, the first time that I consciously realized this is an orgasm without ejaculation was around the age of 30, maybe more than 10 years after I started dealing with this practice. And it was very subtle. It was very, I would say, even something that most people would not consider as an orgasm. And that's part of the thing I tell to men is that, yeah, it requires to really listen and to really feel into those subtle experiences to be able later on to amplify them, to be able then to say, oh, okay, this is interesting. That's where I want to go. So I think it was an orgasm, and I think I didn't ejaculate, something like that. And then I built on that experience. I thought, okay, what if I can amplify that? What if I can take it a little longer? Maybe I can even try to come closer to that point of no return and to pull more energy upwards at the orgasm. And at some point, I started really feeling that expansion, that elevation that comes with, for me, with this type of orgasms, and realize this is so much more powerful than the type of orgasm I had. I have way more energy than even before starting with the practice. I didn't have that dip in the energy that I used to experience before. I felt still connected, and still when I was doing that with a partner, I felt I was still completely there. I wasn't going away or saying, hey, you know, I'm done or something. I was ready to continue, ready to stay present. It was just such a beautiful transition to something that now, if you ask me, I would never want to exchange. Or I would say, yeah, there are situations where I would consciously choose to go for an orgasm with ejaculation, but it's such a different level of a possibility that I would never wanna miss. So I think going in that direction, I think amplifying on those small experiences, that's a way to finally have, yeah, more energy and more intensity during the orgasm.
Yeah, I like the acknowledgement there of your initial experience being almost like questioning, like, oh, was that even a, did that even have that? Was that a non-ejaculatory orgasm? But it, you know, it's because it feels, I mean, at least in my experience, like it feels different, and it can feel at the beginning like not a real orgasm because of the very strong association between the ejaculation reflex and the ejaculatory kind of mechanism and experience with orgasm. So I appreciate you acknowledging that. That's something that I'll share with guys as well. It's like, you know, it'll feel differently. And so we need to broaden our definition of orgasm from like what it is that you've been experiencing. And so, yeah, I'll get guys come back to me when I've given them some practices, and they'll often say like, yeah, I think I experienced this. I'm like, well, was it pleasurable? Was it, you know, a heightened state? Like, did you want to stop afterwards? Do you want to keep going? Like, we'll really start to like unpack the experience. And you know, and at the end of the day, I can't say what is or isn't an orgasm for someone else, but I can give him like the language to help describe his experience. And then usually he goes, yeah, I think it was an orgasm. I think I did experience like this orgasmic experience, and you know, I wanted to keep going, and it was different and it was new. And I was like, great, you know, like, let's not get hung up on defining an orgasm, you know, really specifically. Let's like focus on, was it fun? Was it pleasurable? Did you enjoy it? Do you want to do more of it? If it's a yes to all of those, then let's find out how to do more of that, you know? So I appreciate you mentioning that kind of experience for yourself. Something I wanted to ask then is, because I sent this to you in an email, I love that you've got the infrared camera footage of you experiencing like an orgasmic state. And so I'm curious, when did you have the inclination to start like videoing yourself having these experiences? And then, you know, what was the impetus for incorporating like an infrared camera? Like, I'm curious what your process was behind all of that.
Well, I studied physics and did a PhD in semiconductor solar cells. So
amazing.
Yeah, this kind of background is there in the back, and it made me kind of question, would it be possible to show with modern techniques that process of the energy rising up inside the body? And one of the ideas I had, well, the energy must have some effect on the heat in the body. This is also something that often people would say, oh, they feel this heat, the heat. So maybe
that's true for me. Yeah.
Yeah, so maybe that would be a way of picturing how a wave of energy moves through the body as I'm getting this orgasm, and to have a more scientific data showing, look, there is something happened there. We don't completely understand the science behind that, but it's interesting. Let's do some more research on that. Unfortunately, the setup that we had was not capable to really show a wave going up, but we did see that the heat in the body continued to increase over the whole time of the sex, which I thought was really surprising. I mean, you would think maybe, okay, after 5 minutes, after 10 minutes, after 15 minutes, you reach some kind of a saturation and the body is in a certain temperature. But what we saw is that the temperature kept on going up and up and up. And for me, I mean, it's a one way of interpreting this data. Of course, this is something that you would need to do way more experiments and try to understand also with other methods. But for me, it was a sign that type of sex that often men are doing of, let's say, 5 minutes orgasm ejaculation is so far from what the body is capable to do, how the body goes on and changing, how my inner experience is it keeps on opening. And the more kind of waves I'm getting in my body, I can feel my heart is opening, my head becomes more kind of fluid, my pelvis starts to vibrate in a different way. And I could see that in the heat kind of going up and up. So I still thought it was a beautiful result. And yeah, I still have some other ideas that I want to take that kind of work in a more scientific way, because I think that might make it more relatable to for people who could then say, okay, this is coming from the tradition, but there's also modern methods showing those things are real. They happen and they can really change the way the body is working. And there are also a lot of men talking about the positive benefits of those techniques.
Yeah, I was very excited to see the infrared images. So that's why I'm excited to talk to you about it because I love the idea of, yeah, we've got all these like historically traditional ancient practices, right? Taoist practices, tantric practices that have been around for such a long time, and they obviously have some sort of merit to them in a kind of esoteric sense, energetic sense, but they've never really been looked at scientifically, right? There's not a lot of interrogation of those practices with the scientific method. And so I am all for people doing that because I would love to have that data, right? I'd love to have, you know, there be more research around sex and sexuality in that beautiful, holistic, pleasure positive, you know, spiritual sense, because a lot of the sex research out there is all about dysfunction, right? Of course, and you know, stuff that's wrong with the body and how to treat it with pharmaceuticals. So that's where like all the research tends to head. But yeah, so I was very stoked to see that. What I would be curious to see is the infrared images of you experiencing that orgasmic state compared to someone not, right? Compared to someone just having like a regular ejaculatory orgasm, just like who's not done the work before, who, or even yourself, right? Who's just like going through the motions, you're like really intentionally having a, you know, ejaculatory orgasm and not trying to circulate energy and noticing how that is different in the infrared images. Something that I saw in the imaging was like the heat in your hands, for example. And that's something that I experienced. So it was really nice to kind of see that reflected in the heat marks of that camera. I get a lot of tingling and warmth through my hands and through the bridge of my nose when I have that like multi-orgasmic experience. And yeah, so it just got me thinking about like, I don't know how much an infrared camera setup is going to be. I don't know what I would need to do, but I'd love to experiment and do that for myself. Something that I've attempted to do before is use a heart rate monitor to measure my heart rate, having an ejaculation, non-ejaculatory orgasm, multiple orgasms, and a prostate orgasm, and showing the different ways that my heart rate changes compared to each of those different experiences. And I put that in a newsletter. I don't think I've posted it on social media just yet. Maybe folks on social media aren't ready for that, but I definitely have put it like on my blog because I think it's fascinating, like noticing like there's a really tangible difference here, physically speaking, like cardiovascularly speaking, between these experiences. And like, I can speak about it, I can articulate it as best as I can, but the language is only so much, right? When you've got concrete, like, hey, this is what I'm noticing here in my body with my heart rate, this is how it feels, and then you got something to look at, then it gives like a bit of a you know, stronger touch point for people to relate to. They can be like, oh, okay, great, I can kind of, that makes more sense to me, you know? That's especially true for guys. They're kind of looking for that data-driven approach, I find.
So did you experience a peak in the heartbeat level rate close to the orgasm? Was it?
Yes. So the difference, I'll try and describe it. So the difference when I had an ejaculation, which was at the end, like I recorded like one self-pleasure practice, went for about 25 to 30 minutes. I ejaculated at the end. And so that was like a very quick peak and down again with my heart rate. My heart rate, like as I built up to ejaculation, it just kind of peaked very quickly and then dropped down again quite quickly after that. I had at the beginning experienced like a non-ejaculatory orgasm, and you can see the heart rate kind of builds up a little bit slower, still peaks out a little bit, but it lingers at the top and then comes back down. So it's still like a peak experience, but just not as quick as the ejaculation. The prostate orgasm that I had was like it built up and you can see it stay there for several seconds longer than each of the other experiences. And then it drops down, and because it's multi-orgasmic, my experience of prostate orgasms is it's multi-orgasmic. So it goes down, but it doesn't drop all the way, and then it goes back up again. And you kind of see another little like cup. So yeah, you can very clearly see like the differences in that increase in heart rate and like the speed at which it either drops from that space or stays there. And you know, I can speak to like, yeah, it was much more intense when I was having a prostate orgasm, for example, you know, and that's reflected in my heart rate staying at a higher level for a longer period of time. And the ejaculation, yep, although it was intense, you know, and pleasurable, it was very quick and it was very like temporary, you know. So yeah, it definitely reflects my own like physical sensations that I was experiencing during that practice.
Yeah, beautiful. That sounds really amazing. I'd love to see that data.
I'll send it to you, man. I'll send it to you.
Oh, beautiful. I have a client who sent me, he has a watch where you can detect his heart rate. And he would send me, oh, the last practice I had those four peaks. And the one before it was five, the one before. So it can be used as a easy way to detect that masturbation process. How is it going? What happened? I think it's wonderful to integrate such tools.
Yeah, I've got a conversation that's been happening for like the last 3 or 4 years with a friend of mine. We want to get a EEG, like head mapping mask, and have like an ejaculation and then like a multi-orgasmic experience whilst wearing the EEG and tracking like the data from that. But it's not cheap, and you know, like there's other barriers to entry for that as well. Like you've got to be very still when you are wearing an EEG in order to get an accurate reading, and it's relatively difficult to be quite still when you're trying to have like a self-pleasure, you know, multiple orgasm experience. So we're thinking it'd probably disrupt the data collection method of the you know, nodules on the head if we were to do a self-pleasure practice whilst wearing it. But I'd love to see other people do some cool stuff with what are the other measurement tools we have out there just to collect more information about, you know, people's experiences.
A publication that I know about, people put in an NMR device, and the detection was done for the orgasm and comparing, yeah, the activity in the mind in the orgasm before the orgasm. I think it's fascinating to learn about that. And of course, we don't really know what is the difference. What happens, for example, in the mind when you have that type of orgasms where the energy is moving through the entire body, the full body orgasm compared to those ejaculatory orgasms. But I would love to see such data. So that's definitely an interesting thing to explore.
I'll keep you in mind, man. If I see anything, I'll send you through whatever I find. I'm curious then, like, what is your, I know you've kind of alluded to this, you know, finding those subtle sensations around orgasm and then amplifying them and kind of going on a bit of a journey to find out how to intensify those sensations. Are there any like practical pieces of advice that you give to guys to help them, let's say, like crack the code and have a non-ejaculatory orgasm, like get them over the finish line, so to speak?
Yeah, well, one of the things that I think prevent people who, for example, take a book and start reading about those type of orgasm and practice from really achieving that is that they're not aware of how important it is to prepare the body so that the body is really open and the energy can move. So if my body is closed and if I'm going to do something like that, the only thing I'm going to be able to do is to just block myself from ejaculating in the best case, if you know, I can do that. I won't be really feeling how the energy is moving in the body. So we're looking for an energetic experience. And that means that, yeah, the most important thing is really take the time to build up the experience, to really feel how your breathing is opening your heart, how your mind is becoming more and more still, how your pelvis is opening before attempting to have such an orgasm. And yeah, when the body is open, it's very easy to just guide the energy upwards. You even don't need to tight, I mean, there's the traditional big draw technique that you tight all your muscles and you imagine how the energy pulls up. I have a lot of guys that it works for them just by relaxing and imagining how the energy goes up. So if the body is in the right state, it's just that imagination of me pulling that energy upwards along the spine that can work wonders. So yeah, I would say the most important part here is really to take the time, to open the body before attempting such an orgasm.
Yeah, beautiful, man. Thank you so much for sharing. I'm mindful of time as well. I know it's also late over there for you. We have hit around the hour mark, but I'm curious if there's anything else you wanted to share with guys that are listening who are maybe resonating with this approach and recognize that they want to go on a bit of a sexual journey to explore their pleasure a bit more. Is there any other pointers or tips that you can give them?
Well, I think I would say the masturbation practice that I started maybe 15, 20 years ago, for me was one of the things that completely changed my mind, completely changed my life. And I think that conscious decision to have such a solo sex practice, I think that's a really important part, or can be really helpful for a lot of men. Yeah, I can recall experiences after long time of having this practice where I would turn to my partner and ask her if she would be interested to have sex, and she would say no. And my initial response was to feel rejected and to feel kind of sad, and then to say, hey, just a second, I have my practice, and go and do my practice. And afterwards to feel, wow, I can give myself that thing that usually we keep just for an experience with a partner. And I remember coming back and feel again that love and that being open and relaxed. And I think it's a huge thing to be able to establish that kind of connection with ourselves, other than that additional ability to start moving the energy in the body, start being able to transform our experiences and reach those states that are just limitless in a way, limitless in the potential they carry.
Yeah, beautiful, man. Thank you for bringing it back down to just connecting in with our body and giving ourselves that piece of self-appreciation and self-love and recognizing that we can meet our needs. That's really lovely. And I'm appreciative of you sharing your wisdom with me today, man, and just spending the time chatting. Yeah, I love what you're doing. I love the approach that you're taking as well. And I'm glad that we met, man. I'm glad that we had this conversation. I'm looking forward to speaking to you, you know, in the future as a colleague and as a you know, potential collaborator. So thanks, man. Thanks for sharing.
Yeah, thank you very much, Cam. I was enjoying very much this talk. And I'm looking forward beautiful. To see how things develop.
Thanks, man. Thanks. Well, enjoy the rest of your morning. Hopefully you get some sleep. And I'll talk to you again soon, mate.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
See you. Bye.